Good morning, Carborough and Chapel Hill. This is WILP's Wake Up Call. WILP is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. I'm your host, Lori Hoyt, and Dick Paddock, one of our WILP members, is our engineer, and our guest today is an ally and dear friend, Hank Elkins, who is a member of the Chapel Hill Friends Meeting and also Elders for Peace. And Hank was with Dick and I and several other people in the pouring rain on Wednesday, the day after the president's speech escalating the war, which was very disappointing. And we were there protesting that and trying to make the connection between the cost of war and the cost of health care, which a lot of our politicians seem to be very concerned about the cost of health care, but little mention about the cost of war. So all of that is on the table today. Hank, welcome.
Well, thank you very much, Laurie. It's good to be here. And we are concerned about protesting now because Tuesday night was clearly a watershed in American politics and in our concern about the rest of the world in the Middle East. It's very important for us to be clear on what President Obama said Tuesday night. He said that 30,000 troops will go to Afghanistan. He said there will be no blank checks for the government of Afghanistan, and that now our purpose is not to build a new democracy, not to build health and education in Afghanistan, or to protect the women, but it is to deny Al-Qaeda a safe haven. It is, in other words, about our safety, not about the people of Afghanistan. The government of Pakistan, he said, is to be our friend and ally, and our success is going to be secure if we can find that partnership in the people of Pakistan. And unlike the Soviets, President Obama said, we are not here to stay. We are not here to be occupiers. We are here to end the violence with Al-Qaeda and to protect the citizens of the United States, in a sense. So what was left out? Well, clearly what was left out was the real cost of this war. The beginning, Obama said, of our pullout would be in July 2011. But that is the inception, not the end. We know that in Iraq, what it took to push us out was a united effort of the Iraqis to say that they had enough of our occupation. And so what we have to ask is, will there be, in the fragmented country that is Afghanistan, cobbled together from the tribes and communities and with the warlords, will there ever be enough push to say in 2011, get out? It's a real question.
I just wanted to pick up on that. There is little comparison between Afghanistan and Iraq. Iraq was a functioning nation state. Afghanistan, I don't think has ever been. It has been a 40,000 or more little villages. There's tribes. They've never really had a strong, I don't know if they ever, but for a long time anyhow, and maybe ever, have had a strong, what we would call a nation state.
That's right.
And so whether they can get it together with that many fragmented different tribes and villages, get it, and the communication even is so poor there, because they could ever get it together to say, please leave, like Iraq did.
Well, that's right, Laurie. And how can we expect the government to perform if the country is so fragmented, mm-hmm. so poorly knit together with lack of communications?
Mm-hmm. No infrastructure, hardly at all.
And remember that we still have 124,000 troops in Iraq. We haven't really gotten out of there. And it's not just the military troops we have in Afghanistan. We have more than 113,000 contractors or mercenaries who are working there.
Is it that many?
It is indeed.
Oh, that's horrible.
It's more than the number of troops we have there.
I didn't know it was that many. That's terrible. And that does not get mentioned.
I didn't get mentioned, and what didn't get mentioned was the analogy with Vietnam. The thought that we could up our ante there in Afghanistan the way we did in Vietnam and somehow have guns and butter when we've got a major domestic problem here in this country of building our own country.
That is, it's just so sad. We're both old enough to have that sense of deja vu with Lyndon Johnson, whose heart was also good in terms of domestic. But he caved in to the general saying, a little more troops, a little more troops. You know, it's like we put this much in. It's like a bad marriage. I put this much in. I just got to keep it going, even though it's getting more and more destructive. And I think I feel so resentful at Stanley McChrystal. It reminds me of MacArthur, that arrogance in giving press releases about what he was going to request from the president, 45,000 troops, before the president even got his message. And I just think that that put the president under such a bind in this country where so many people use this idea of military might, that they connect that with America's being a good country. We must have this military power. And I wonder if he keeps this up, McChrystal, whether there'll be a similar confrontation that Truman had to do with MacArthur and say, come home.
That may be, and Roosevelt had that too. He realized that when MacArthur had come in under Hoover to chase away the bonus army, riding in with full military regalia, with the sabers drawn and the cavalry.
At the veterans, the veterans.
That's right. In contrast, when the bonus army came to Washington and under FDR, FDR sent them home with the opportunity for a job with the CCC. 2,400 accepted. The other 600 went home with a train ticket, and he was concerned about jobs.
Yes.
We have over 30% of our youth who are black who are unemployed.
Yes.
We have over 20% of Hispanics. This country is in need right now of jobs, not to mention the people in Afghanistan.
And the president is having this job conference right now, and I just heard a little bit on NPR. Even with Dean Baker, who is a progressive economist, the proposals put forward seem so timid. And I think, where is the boldness of FDR when there's such a huge domestic problem here? You know, where is Obama's Francis Perkins, FDR's Secretary of Labor?
We need a Francis Perkins. We need a Harry Hopkins.
And Eleanor Roosevelt.
Absolutely.
You know, Michelle's got to hold his feet to the fire. He is not getting good advice. You know, he's caving in Lyndon Johnson did to the general's, you know, pleas or demands for more and more troops.
This time of year, in the beginning of December 1933, Roosevelt realized it was going to be cold that winter, and a lot of people were without work. And so he turned to Harry Hopkins and he said, start a new job program under the CWA. And by the mid-December, a few days equivalent from now, they had 800,000. By the mid-January, 1.5 million, and the end of February, over 4 million people of 1934 in February were employed.
That was the most amazing thing. I guess you saw that documentary on the Civilian Conservation Corps.
I missed that. Tell us about it.
Oh, well, it's just what you're saying. They mobilized so quickly. And, of course, they weren't able to pay very much, but people who were hungry got three good meals a day. They got clothes. They got two pair of boots. And some of them said they never had a second pair of boots in their life. And they did you know, talk about the environment, environmental reconstruction. They planted over 1.5 billion trees. That, you know, we could go on and on about that. I want to get back to Afghanistan, wow. But we'll have to
$30 a week and $25 went home.
So it wow. helped the people at home, and maybe the equivalent today would be a couple hundred a week.
Right.
But it went home, and they had money in their pocket, and they are esprit de corps. FDR went and visited the camps and told them how important they were in rebuilding this country.
Well, back to Afghanistan.
And yes,
the equivalent is, they need schools. And
yes.
Greg Mortensen has said that when the local people are in favor of schools, the Taliban has not attacked. Not a single one of his schools has been destroyed, even schools for girls. It is provided, of course, that the teachers are women. This is protected even by the Taliban.
So Greg Mortensen is the one who wrote Three Cups of Tea.
That's exactly
I've
right.
I've always meant to get that. I put it right down on my list here.
Well,
And I heard a similar thing on Amy, the head of CARE.
Yes.
Was on complaining how the military, when they come into their area, that discredits that they are then connected with the military, and that's where they get into trouble. They've been there for years helping with schools and medical facilities, but when there's the military around, they get connected with the military, and that's when they're in danger. The military endangers reconstruction efforts rather than they don't need or want that kind of protection.
That's right. Well, $1 million to maintain a single U.S. soldier in Afghanistan would build 20 schools.
Mm.
So the choice
that's
is...
That's $1 million a year.
$1 million a year.
I had got...
That's only part of the... part of the course.
I'm sure that their supplies and everything, but $1 million a year.
We're talking about... for a year in Afghanistan, $100 billion... That's not to count the aftermath for our soldiers and others who are coming home, or the destruction for the Afghan people.
And the years of medical care for those who are so severely maimed, which is heartbreaking. And we're not even then getting to the severely maimed Afghanistani people, the women, the children that are killed.
We're saying they're worse off now with this war than they were under the Taliban, because the war is particularly hurting women and children.
Yes. And as a woman, that's something that, you know, we've got to point out, and Wilf really needs to do that as a Women's Internationally, point out over and over again, that the soldiers are not the worst casualties in wars anymore. It's the civilians. It's the orphans. It's the women and children who are killed, who are injured, who do not get the good care because they're in such primitive situations. So we've got to keep that in our mind. I know Obama spoke movingly of his concern, and I applaud him for taking so long to think about it instead of it being an off-the-cuff, let's go do that, like the cowboy decisions that maybe were made prior to him. However, all of that time spent, he did not come out with a good decision. And it's not just that we're on the left. It's a matter of, I think, almost half the country is not wanting us to keep on in Afghanistan.
Well, that's right. We've got the opinion polls showing that more than half the country is opposed to this war, and yet we're forging ahead. It's also true that Obama talked about forging a new beginning between America and the Muslim world. But tragically, we know that's not so. I mean, it was a week before that the U.S. was pushing for new sanctions against Iran. And he lost thereby a wonderful opportunity to engage in this speech with Iran by talking about how Iran was so instrumental in the post-2011 period, diplomatically and militarily, to help us with the Northern Alliance and forge thereby a new agreement to move ahead. Iran was our helper
right after. Most Americans have no idea of that.
That's correct.
Yes, he should be publicly thanking them for their help. And so that we get such a one-sided picture, and it really worries and concerns me, this increased drumbeat of demonization of Iran, and yet they're the ones who have let the AIEI, do I have the atomic energy.
That's right, the IAEA.
The IAEA. Come in and inspect where Israel has not, and yet everybody knows, or that seems to be very common knowledge, that they have nuclear facilities, and that is just kept quiet.
Iran is a signer of the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, and October 4th of last year, 2008, they signed and agreed in Vienna the Convention for a Nuclear-Free Middle East that the U.S. and Israel opposed. They have not violated, according to their own understanding, of the Nuclear Proliferation Treaty. Israel is not a signer, nor is Pakistan or India, Cuba or North Korea, but we are seemingly focusing all our vitriol against Iran.
Frank, as we're talking, we're broadening the scope to looking at the Mideast region, a scope that Obama did not address, and we're going to take a break for a minute
right now,
a station break, and remind our listeners that this is WILP's wake-up call. WILP is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. I'm Lori Hoyt, your host. Dick Paddock is our engineer, and our guest today is Hank Elkins, and we're talking about the cost of war and the president's escalation of the war in Afghanistan, one of our many wars, it seems like. But I also want to mention that we are so pleased to have an underwriter who we also see as an ally in our work to get good information out to the community that's not on your commercial airwaves or TV screens. And that is the Internationalist Bookstore. The Internationalist Bookstore has been around for some decades now. It's just like WCOM. It's all volunteer run. It's at 405 West Franklin Street, and they have books of about more or less a lot of mostly about politics, but about many cultural things, the kind of books that you are not going to find maybe in your chain bookstore. So it's a local bookstore, and right now, you know, the big cry to try to survive this economy is buy local. So Internationalist Bookstore, and you can find out more on the web by internationalistbooks.org. And by the way, if your signal is a little weak getting our program, you can stream us live at streaming at WCOMFM.org. And we're going to get back to our guest, Hank Elkins. And we had just expanded the whole issue of Afghanistan, which the president, which I was very sad about, he mentioned Pakistan, kind of blurred that together, but did not mention a regional framework for how to look at what's happening there and what is the best course for the U.S. So back to Hank.
Well, that's right. I think the mirage of an alliance with the Muslim world was precisely that, a mirage. It's unfortunate that we've retreated now from the effort to persuade Israel to freeze the settlement construction. Mm. And as long as that thorn of Palestine-Israel is in the side of world peace, we cannot hope to have the kind of strong alliance with the Muslim world that we need. We need that for Pakistan. We need that for real peace in the Pakistan and Afghanistan area. There's concern, of course, that in terms of being a Muslim, that the current president of Afghanistan is not sufficiently Muslim. There's with the whole problem of tribalism, the whole problem of the religious push that Taliban has seized as part of their badge of entitlement within the Afghanistan region. Mm. I'd like to get back a little bit more to jobs again. We talked about
making that connection.
The need for jobs in Afghanistan and a way of doing helping with education, as Nicholas Kristof said yesterday. One of the tribal leaders said, "We need brain power. We don't need firepower." And the schools there that could be built would be doing just that and building brain power.
Oh, that's, let's say that again, brain power, not firepower. That is just such a, we got to put that on signs and walk around. Really, if the president just could realize that, I thought he would. I thought he would more emphasize diplomacy, reconstruction, rather than this, let's send drones over and terrify people.
Well, the opportunity for us to unite with the people in Afghanistan in our own concern of education and health and welfare here in this country is what I think we need to emphasize in our concern and our effort. Robert Pollitt, the University of Massachusetts, has pointed out that for every dollar we spend in Afghanistan and Iraq, we could get $2 worth of benefit for the creation of jobs with health, with education, and an infrastructure spending here in this country. That our dollars in Afghanistan and Iraq do not create jobs in the way in which they would if those dollars were spent domestically for health, education, and infrastructure. So this is a concern which unites with the Afghan people
in
building for education and building for health and welfare.
And it can unite the Afghan people with our people because it's a common need. Our people, too. I mean, I know we're a much richer country, but the issue of jobs and health care is critical in this country, and yet we are spending billions to go over and destroy what little infrastructure these poor people have. You know, it just does not make any sense. And I think I am so disappointed with that Obama, in the talk of change, I thought it was going to be much more emphasis on diplomacy, much more emphasis on building, that whole emphasis on hope and change. And I know in his heart, I mean, I still have faith that he's a smart man and this is what he wants to do, but he's much too timid in what he actually does compared to his rhetoric. And I think that's becoming a real going to be a real problem for him.
Undoubtedly, he's being pushed by those who are around him, who do not feel that
the national security state, you know, the what do they call it, the Washington consensus. And he knows that there needs to be change, but he's afraid to rattle them too much.
Well, that's right. When Seymour Hersh was here a few weeks ago, he pointed out that every general who was upgraded had to come into Rumsfeld, click his heels, and agree to the type of neoconservative, type of empire building that was part of the Bush-Cheney regime. So this is a type of military, unfortunately, that Obama inherited. Mm-hmm. And we cannot anticipate that the voices for peace are going to resound within the current military.
No.
And he is confronted with that pressure, as
yeah.
he is with some of his advisors.
Yes.
So our voices need to be strong.
We need to be much stronger.
The alliance that brought him to the presidency needs to be loud and clear.
We need to remind him who are the ones who voted for you, who worked for you. And when he picked his advisors right away, my heart sank. Larry Summers, excuse me. You know, he was against extending just recently the unemployment benefits. Thank God Biden is there trying to stick up for the working man. But, you know, and I know politically maybe he can't get rid of him, but maybe he can sideline him and get in. We've got to push him to get some better advisors in. He is not getting good advice. I mean, and that's the president relies so much. He just can't do everything. And he really needs his back watched better by people who have a broader progressive vision.
Yes. One of the ways to create new jobs that Paul Krugman has emphasized is the creation passage of job credits for those employers who do that, the effort of the government itself to promote new jobs. This is crucial for this country, and we need that shift away from the military spending. We need the shift away from not just the direct military spending, but what we consider foreign aid, where we're giving a large percentage of our foreign aid goes into military.
That, yes, it's not really foreign aid. It is military aid. And that is, again, a sad thing. We're, what, have we beat Russia by being the largest exporter of war war equipment and guns and things that I think we may have. And that's a sad race to win. And I think, again, I think I heard it from you and in a few other places that we spend more on military stuff than all the other countries combined.
That's exactly right. More than all the countries now in the world. Our military budget has surpassed that.
So somehow we have become, and this is where I was also disappointed in Obama's speech, was he did the American sort of narrative that was patently, I think, and he knows, not true, that we've been for six decades protecting people, that we've not wanting their resources, to take their resources or occupy them. And then you want to say, excuse me, you know we have military in 130 countries. You know that we're in South and Central America and poor developing countries, you know, with military to get their resources. You know, we are an empire, and the whole thing we're hoping you will do is start dismantling or at least containing it and shrinking it so that there's something left over for our people, let alone the people in the world.
Yes. Well, we've talked about education for Afghanistan, the building of the 20 schools for $1 million, the idea that we need schools and education in this country as well in expenditures. Health is another area that Afghanistan is suffering. And according to UNICEF, Afghanistan is one of the three worst countries in the world for a child to be born in. We know that here in this country that infant mortality is around the 22nd or 21st in the world. We have a long way to go. So we need to join forces in better health care, both in Afghanistan and the U.S.
Yes. Well, when you hear these things, it's so sad. And one part of us, I think sometimes we just say, oh, I don't want to hear it. I just want to go and forget all this. But we can't, because this is affecting our daily lives, all of us. If you have children and care about that there'll be some kind of decent education for them, even if you have a good job now and have health care, you don't know what's going to happen. Our country's economy has become more and more unstable in terms of how workers are treated. You know, the elites and people in finance are still raking it in. But for a lot of people, it's become a pretty scary thing in terms of having any surety or, you know, that you can count on the future for your children or for yourself in terms of health care, education, and jobs.
The ironic point of Tuesdays being U.S. or being World AIDS Day is that $25 billion, what it's going to cost us to spend, what we'll spend in Afghanistan in just 3 months, would have paid for the entire program designed to serve 6 to 7 million people, with 70 million pregnant women being helped with preventive services. That would be just $25 billion, and we've decided to spend it in 3 months in Afghanistan.
Well, Hank, before we run out of time, do you want to give, we have just 1 minute, do you want to give any kind of website or where people can get more information?
Yes. One of the good websites is the Friends Committee on National Legislation. That's www.fcnl.org, where Jim Fine, who was here last year, provides extraordinarily good coverage, informed coverage about the Middle East. Another is peaceaction.org. That's PEACE-ACTION.org. And you can, good information at those two sites about the current situation in both Afghanistan and the larger realm of Middle East.
Okay, and we have a little bit of time. If you care about what we're talking about now, please contact the president and tell him you oppose any further increase of U.S. troops in Afghanistan. That's a simple message. Call the White House comment line, 202-456-1111. 202-456-1111. And if you want to get this program and other programs that we have every Friday, you can go to our website and link to our radio show, Triangle Wilf, WYLPF.org. And remember, WILP has a P in it, WYLPF.org. We'll be back next Friday, and I just want to remind you on December 7th to please go to the County Commissioners meeting in Hillsborough, that the waste transfer site is going to be up for decision making, and we've been struggling for years to support the Rogers Road Eubanks community and oppose the Millhouse Road proposed site. We're brought to you by WCOMLP Chapel Hill and Carrboro, and we'll be back next Friday at 7:30.